So welcome back, everybody, to Wednesday Night Beyond the Parsha. We have Parshas Korach this week. We're going to be talking about fair fighting, how to disagree agreeably, a topic which is all too important for us as Jewish people, for us as a community, for really the American people at large. You see what's going on, and it's tough. It's a very interesting time in the world. It's a very interesting time in America, and our hope is that everything kind of calms down in the safest and best way possible, as soon as possible. We all know that unrest in America is not something which is good for anyone around the world. And Amir Tashem, everything will be great soon. Have a lot of thoughts that we'll talk about maybe another time. But today what we're going to talk about is Machlokas. You know, they say we have Kiddush Levana. And when we do Kiddush Levana, there's a very interesting part of Kiddush Levana where we go Shalom Aleichem and someone says back Aleichem Shalom and you go to three different people, Shalom Aleichem, Aleichem Shalom. And many ask, even just the general greeting of Shalom Aleichem, hi, how are you, or hello. And then you say back Aleichem Shalom. It doesn't make any sense. What kind of response is that to a greeting? If someone says, hello, how are you? You don't say, are you, hello? What are you saying the thing backwards? It doesn't make any sense. What are we trying to do? Y.Y. Jacobson likes to say that when Jews go and talk to each other, we have to start out fighting. In order to be able to proceed into whatever else we're going to talk about, Shalom Aleichem, no, you apikoros, it's Aleichem Shalom, forget about Shalom Aleichem, no, you're apikoros, you fool, come on, you're crazy. Once we're starting off in a machlokas, then we know we can move forward. But so that's a joke. But in all seriousness, we know that machlokas is something which plagues families, which plagues communities, which plagues the Jewish people, and which plagues the world at large. And we know that shalom and peace is something which is so crucial to every single thing that we do. The Gemara Sanhedrin tells us that a couple could live together, and if they're in peace and harmony, then they can live on the edge of a sword. But if there's tension in the house, if things are not going well, if there's a lot of machlokas, you could live in the biggest mansion in the world, it's not going to help. Peace is the ultimate, that's what we strive for. V'yaseim lecha shalom at the end of the Birchas Koranim. That's the whole emphasis. Everything else is nice, but without shalom, without peace, it's just not going to work. And why are we talking about this now? So obviously it's in Yana Diyoma, there's a ton of machlokas going on. But also, Parshas Korach. And when we have Parshas Korach, we have the classic rebellion. And what exactly this rebellion was about, maybe we'll talk about this more on Shabbos. The common sense rebellion, how maybe just out of pure boredom, Korach and his Ada went up against Moshe and Aaron and challenged, how come you guys are in charge? It should really be us. And it caused a whole standoff. Ultimately, Korach and his Ada all died. The ground opens up and swallows them. A bunch of different messages of how this was determined and the different contests to show that Moshe and Aaron were legit and that Korach and his Ada were not. So we have the Torah, but we also have a fascinating Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. I don't mean to step on the Rebbetzin's territory, Pirkei Avos, but in the fifth parak of Pirkei Avos, the Mishnah tells us that there are two types of machloks and two types of arguments. One is l'shem shemayim, and one is shelo l'shem shemayim. When you're fighting l'shem shemayim, like Hillel and Shammai, so we know the famous Hillel and Shammai. So when you're fighting l'shem shemayim, then the Mishnah says, sofa l'hiskayim. So unclear exactly what those words mean, but simple pshat, what that means is that, you know, you're gonna end up being friends, you're gonna remain friends, the content that matters is going to be able to stay. We'll talk about that in a little more. But if you have a machlokes shelo l'shem shemayim, not for the sake of heaven, just for argument's sake, like Korach ve'adaso, says the Mishnah, then it is ina sofa l'hiskayim. So we're going to have to base on those mefarshim and really just understanding that Mishnah, understanding our parsha, there is so much to go ahead and discuss. Now, the first thing we have to discuss before we understand how to fairly fight and how to fight properly and how to maybe calm machlokas down is to understand that machlokas itself is not an ideal. You know, obviously in our religion there is a lot of diversity. And naturally there is going to be some sort of machlokas. You know, when they had in YU they had the certain cardinals. I think we've spoken about this in the past, not the St. Louis Cardinals, but cardinals from the church. And they came to the Beis Medrash and they saw the people fighting with each other and yelling at each other and screaming at each other, the chavrusas going back and forth. And then they saw them going right after Seder, going in arm-in-arm for lunch. Okay, not everyone goes arm-in-arm, but you know what I mean. They were just best friends going out to lunch together. I understand, you were just killing each other a minute ago, now you're going for lunch. But no, the answer is when you're searching for the MS, you're not offended by anyone. No one's offending anyone. You're searching for the MS, you're going for the truth. That's the goal. You're all on the same team trying to get the same thing. That's what it's supposed to be. And it's important to know, though, that machlokas in general is not an ideal. We're going to talk about maybe how to make it that it doesn't get so explosive and how to maybe contain machlokas in arguments, but that's not the ideal. Just like down the kafslus, for example, the Mishnah in Avos, again, shout out to the Rebbetzin, tells us that you should be danas koladim lekafslus, you should judge everybody favorably. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein always liked to say that that's also not a lechachilah. Of course, if you are going to be judging people, you have to judge them favorably, but ideally don't judge. Ideally don't look at other people and think, oh, what are they? No, ideally just be on your own and continue to live your life and to be as best as you can. But we know that human nature is to fight, and we know that naturally there is machlokas, again, whether it be within families, communities, in the world, anywhere it is, we know that there is fights. What we want to discuss tonight is two questions. Number one is, how can we disagree without things escalating? We know nowadays, especially in America, it has turned from I have my opinion, you have your opinion, to I have my opinion, and if you disagree with that, you are a terrible individual, and you are horrible, and you're awful, and you're evil. On both ends, that's what everyone's saying. No matter what, if you disagree, you are evil. So how do we keep things from escalating? How are we able to keep it civil? And then number two is, how are we able to, even when we're in that thick of the machlokas, how can we maybe avoid things before damage is done? Why is it so difficult for us to step away from machlokas? Why is it so difficult to not get that last word in, or to not get that last zing in, or whatever it may be? What is it that's so difficult about that? What is it that we are really trying to go about? And it's very interesting, if you look at the Chafetz Chaim, at the end of Hilchos Shmiras HaLashon, the Chafetz Chaim's work on Shmiras HaLashon, at the end he talks about machlokas in a few of his essays. And in his essays he says that the Yitzhara for Nitzachon is so big, to win. I need to win. People always feel, I'm already in this battle, I have to come out on top. I'm right, I have to win, I have to be the one that makes that other person feel bad. It has to be the truth, it has to be, that's the way that it is. It's the principle of the thing. Forget about being right or wrong. Sometimes you'll hear people say, it's the principle of it, I have to continue to go into this fight because it's the principle of it, and I need to make sure that I'm showing them that I'm right. This need to win is something which is such a difficult thing. It's something which is so difficult to overcome. It's a tremendous Yetzirah. One of the things which can help, they say, the Pasuk tells us, Lo yeh kekorach v'cha adaso, that there should not be another, there will not be another like Korach and his Eder. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz asks a very interesting question. The word yeh means that there will never be a fight like Korach and his Eder. But I don't know, have you looked around and ever seen a fight between, I mean, just think about what it was. It was a boss and a worker who's working for that boss who thinks that he's more capable than that boss and thinks, hey, there's maybe some nepotism going around. Hey, maybe I'm not getting a fair shake. I don't know. I feel like that happens in every single company everywhere. That's the most common machlokas there is. Everyone, oh, my boss this, my boss that. Should be zocha to work for bosses that people are, you know, don't feel like. This is a very common problem. So what does this mean? Lo yeh kekorach v'cha adaso, that there's never going to be anyone like Korach and his disciples. There's machlokas, unfortunately, all the time in every situation. So what does this mean? So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz explains is that this machlokas between Korach and Moshe, or Korach and his Eda versus Moshe, is very unique in that there was one side who was 100% right, and there was one side who was 100% wrong. Never again in history will there be such a machlokas where there is a 100% right and a 100% wrong. Korach and his Eda were bored, they were jealous, whatever it was. Moshe and Aaron were dictated from Hashem, they were told from Hashem, this is what's going to be, you guys are going to be the leader, end of discussion, there's nothing else to talk about. They were 100% right and Korach and his Eda were 100% wrong. There will never be a machlokas like that. Even if it's 90% to 10%, 80-20, whatever it may be. And yeah, maybe you are more right. But to understand that there's never going to be a situation, says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, where someone is 100% right, even if it may feel like that. And I need to come out on top. I need to win. There's never going to be anything like that. And while that's not always so easy to see at the time, if you are able to keep that idea in mind, to know that there is another side, to think what the other side could potentially be saying, that's something that can help us in those types of situations. It's also a very interesting idea that we see by the end of the parsha. One of the tests, or one of the contests that come up between Aaron and Korach and his Eda, is they take a stick and they see if anything is going to grow on this stick. What is the thing that is growing on the stick? The Torah tells us it's shkedim. What are shkedim? Almonds, right? So almonds are going to be growing onto this stick, and whoever has these grow onto the stick, they win, and we see that that person's the real Kohen Gadol, and that person's really supposed to be in charge. And we know what happens, that Aaron has some shkedim, Aaron has some almonds grow on his stick, and the Korach and his Eda do not. And we see that Aaron comes out on top. So the Rav Kook has a fascinating idea, and he asks, why specifically almonds? Could have been anything. What's so unique about almonds? Why is it so unique? Why is it so particularly almonds that teach us this idea, that teach us the lesson about Korach fighting against Aaron and Moshe? What is the message behind these almonds? And he points out that one of the bigger Yetzirahs, aside from not wanting to lose and wanting to make sure you win the battle, it's very difficult to admit either that we're sorry, even if we are right, it's very difficult to go to a compromise. These are things which are very, very tough to do. So says Rav Kook, this is what the almonds represent. What do you mean? There are two ways to go about a fight. Either you can continue in going strong in this fight, and you know what? The principle of it, I need to win, I need to do this, whatever it is, I need to make sure that I come out on top. Or you could be a mevater. We have one of these children's books that we like to read from the people who made I Can Make a Kiddush Hashem. They also wrote I Can Be a Mevater. I don't know if my kids know what mevater means. I think they do at this point. You know, you give the kid on your, you give the other kid the seat on the bus, or you give this. It doesn't always work amongst themselves when they're fighting over everything, but now they're pretty good. But, you know, the idea of being a mevater, it's very difficult to do. So says Rav Kook that almonds are very unique. Why? Because the Gemara in Brachos tells us something fascinating in terms of the bracha that you're supposed to make on an almond. The Gemara asks, what's the bracha supposed to be? And the Gemara has an explanation that there are two types of almonds. One type of almond, while it's on the tree, it's very bitter at first, when it's first ready to be taken off. And the longer it stays on the tree, the longer it's left there, the sweeter it gets. And it gets sweeter and sweeter as you continue to go. And that's one type of almond. And the other type of almond is very sweet at first. And the longer it stays on the tree, the more bitter it gets. So says Rav Kook, this is why this specifically had to be the idea behind this machlokus between Korach and Moshe, Korach and Aaron. It needed to be these almonds. Why? Because it wanted to highlight that there are two ways to go ahead and have a machlokus. If you go ahead and, you know, you go deep into the machlokus, we're going to fight, we're going to scream, we're going to shout, we're going to really get this one off the hook. So maybe at first it feels good. It feels like, oh, I'm fiery, I'm passionate, I'm going to win, the adrenaline is pumping, this is amazing. But the longer the machlokas keeps on going, it might be sweet at first. It just does not end well. And it does not continue to feel good. Staying in machlokas is not the way to be. But then there's another way to go about machlokas. And that is, be mevater. And even if maybe you're right to say, look, I'm sorry it went down that way, I'm sorry it had to happen that way, or I'm sorry about this, I'm sorry about that, you know, maybe we can talk, maybe we can come to some sort of compromise. That does not necessarily feel so good at first. It's not so sweet at first. It's a little bitter at first. But as time goes on, you realize, oh, I did the right thing, and then it becomes sweet. The almonds represent the two types of styles of machlokas. Korach and Zeda went in one way, Moshe and Aaron went in a different way. In fact, Moshe and Aaron, they tried to avoid the machlokas entirely. The Medrash tells us one of the things that they were accused of, what Korach and Zeda came to try to accuse them of, was that they were alone with a woman inappropriately. They tried to make a gzeir sheva from kinoi like a sota. They were accusing Moshe Rabbeinu of being with a woman like a sota. Again, that's a crazy claim to make against Moshe Rabbeinu. And Moshe Rabbeinu, instead of having this whole fiery debate, Moshe Rabbeinu just goes and plants his camp elsewhere. He doesn't want to deal with it. He doesn't want to have to go ahead and have this machlokas. He'd rather just walk away. We see that that would be the ideal. This is what we spoke about with the Don Lakovskos. Better not to even get into this machlokas. But if we are in this machlokas, to understand that there's never 100-0. There's never anyone who's 100% right to someone who's 0% right. And there's never a situation where it feels better to keep the machlokas going. To be able to forgive and move on, whatever it is, it's like you're letting someone live in your head for free. They're not paying any rent. They're just living in your head. You have the opportunity to kick them out as the landlord. You have the opportunity to free your head up. So these are just a few ideas to think about in terms of avoiding the machlokas before it starts. But what about once we're in a machlokas? Once we're in a machlokas, we all know that these things get fiery. How do we de-escalate? How do we make sure that things can just stay civil? How do we make sure that people can have differences of opinion? It's possible. It happens. And it doesn't have to turn into you being an awful person and you're terrible, you're awful. how do we go ahead and do something like that? How are we supposed to approach this? And I think, and I, a lot of this is based on a shiur also from one of my rabbis, Rabbi David Gottlieb, a few ideas from my grandfather, whatever it is, but a few other ideas. But just to, let's, we're going to break it up into five different categories and five different ideas, five different approaches that maybe can help us with this idea, something which is a chizuk for everyone, because everyone interacts with some people in some capacity, whether it be family, friends, community. It could be anyone. It could be anyone who you come across in the whole day. Machlokas is always a viable option, and it's important that we know how to maintain civility no matter what is going on. So number one idea from Rav Yonason Eibishitz. Rav Yonason Eibishitz, in his Sefer Yaros Dvash, he explains, and a lot of these ideas are obvious, but we know the Messias Yisharim in his introduction explains that even when things are obvious, they're obvious for a reason. They still need to be reminded, they still need to be thought of, they still need to be brought up. Just because something's obvious doesn't mean that you're always thinking about it. And things are classic and obvious because they're right. And it's important to keep those ideas in mind as well. So Rav Yonason Eibishitz explains the number one piece of advice when it comes to machlokas is to make sure that it does not become personal. Focus on the issue at hand, but not on the person. This is what the Mishnah Nevos tells us, that Korach was shelo l'shem shemayim. And many ask, I don't understand, if someone's getting into a machlokas, especially when it comes to divine things, like Korach and his Edor, and they were accusing Moshe and Aaron, they were saying, we should be the Kohen Gadol, we should be the people in charge, we should be the ones closer to Hashem. This seems to be a machlokas that's very much L'Shem Shemayim. So what does it mean if it's not L'Shem Shemayim? You ask anyone who's in the heat of a machlokas. Obviously, us talking right now, we're pretty calm, I think. I mean, I can't really hear you guys can only hear me, but it looks pretty calm for the people who I can see. You might not think of this right now, but when you're in the heat of a battle with someone, of course you think it's L'Shem Shemayim. No one would just be fighting for the sake of fighting. There's clearly something there. There's clearly a reason why we're fighting. So how are you able to tell if something is L'Shem Shemayim or not? What's the way to properly view this idea in the mirror where you're able to objectively tell? And he explains, Rav Yonason Eibishitz explains, and a few others explain as well, you have to look at your relationship with this person outside of this machlokas. How do you interact with this person when you see them on the street, when you see them in shul, even before this machlokas would happen? Are you being totally objective? Are there other feelings there that maybe have not been brought up? This is a very important thing to think about in terms of, have I made it personal? Can I now not even look at them in any other context? Okay, well, yeah, we disagreed about what color maybe a certain tablecloth should be. So am I not able to look at them now when I see them in shul? That's tough. That doesn't make a lot of sense. How are we supposed to do this? We know, unfortunately, we see families torn apart for silly, silly reasons. You have people, you know, unfortunately, you see a lot, and not even from this, we'll forget about this. You know, you see families that for so many years haven't been talking to each other. And I'm not saying that there aren't things which are justified. Of course there are things. And usually, obviously, it's related to money, whatever it may be. But certain times you're talking to families and they have to sit shiva in different places. They don't even remember the reason why they're fighting, but they just know that they hate each other. They don't even remember what happened. They don't even remember this. And again, obviously things are there for a reason, and not saying every situation is easy, and not obviously not every situation is the same. It's just something to think about, how we can keep discussions from becoming personal. Argue about the issue and move on. It doesn't have to become personal. That's idea number one from Rav Yonason Eibishitz in the Yaros Dvash. Idea number two, and again, this seems obvious, but we have to point these things out. And the second thing is that you need to talk to the other side. You need to talk to the person. Just letting the anger sit there and fester does not help. If you just leave it there, it's not just going to disappear. And we see this come out throughout the Torah and throughout our Parsha as well. Moshe wants to talk to Dasan v'Aviram. Dasan v'Aviram are some of the main pot stirrers. They're the ones who are firing everyone up and causing a lot of commotion. And Moshe wants to meet with them, and they refuse to meet with him. Why do they refuse to meet with him? Because they don't want to talk to him. They're having a much better time bashing Moshe behind his back. Even the Medrash tells us that Moshe reached out and requested to meet with Korach. And Korach refused to meet with him. Why? The Medrash tells us because he was afraid that he was going to talk to Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe Rabbeinu would convince him. Moshe Rabbeinu would tell him, look, God told me how to do this. God told me how to divvy everything up. It was nothing personal. It is what it is. And okay, I'm sorry. That's just what it is. And he didn't want to hear this because he didn't want things to be okay. This could also be what Shalom L'Shem Shemayim means. He wasn't actually arguing for a purpose. He knew that if he got into a real machlokas and a real discussion with Aaron, with Moshe and Aaron, that he had no chance, that of course he was going to understand it, but he was arguing for the sake of arguing no matter what. Now, sometimes maybe it's not so practical to be able to talk to that person face-to-face or one-on-one. So you have a third party there. That still counts. But we know that the more distance there is, the more nasty things get. And you don't have to look much farther than social media. You look at Twitter and you look at whatever else. If you're, let's say someone's mad at an employee or an employer and you write an email, it's not the same as if you're talking to them face to face. You're going to be much harsher over Twitter when you are hiding behind your computer or over text message than you would be, maybe even over the phone. But especially if you're not talking to them face to face, or if you are talking to them face to face, it's not going to be the same as if you're tweeting at them or sending a Facebook post about them. We know the more distance there is, that the more dangerous it gets. And this idea of really being able to hear the other side, making sure you understand where the other person is coming from, is so crucial. My grandfather was telling me that when we say Shemona Esrei, we know we say Oseh Shalom Bimromav, Hu Yaseh Shalom Aleinu. When it comes to Shalom, this idea of Shalom, what do? When we say this idea of Shalom, we take 3 steps back first. You got to take a few steps back, look at the whole situation, and then you can have Shalom. If you want to go into Shalom, you need to be able to hear every single side. And Rav Shimon Schwab explains that this, again, highlights this L'Shem Shemayim versus Shalom L'Shem Shemayim. When you have a machlokas, that's L'Shem Shemayim, like Hillel and Shammai. So they're arguing about how we light the menorah. Right, that's one of the classic machloks in Beis Hillel Beis Shammai. So do we go from 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, or 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and each of them give their reasons, Malin Vikodesh Vein Moridin, Keneged Pareacha, all these different reasons that they give. So you could hear both sides. Yeah, we happen to paskin like Beis Hillel in that situation, maybe Beis Shammai. The Gemara tells us that in the times of Mashiach, we're going to paskin like Beis Shammai. Maybe that's why it's so full of Hiskayim that it's going to exist. But you can hear both sides. There's two opinions, and okay, I understand your opinion. I just think you're wrong, for now. I don't think that this applies. I think that my logic is better. I think that halacha should follow a certain way. Okay, and that's what it is. So for this guy, and we're still going to learn all of the shitas of Beis Shammai. In Shas, we have plenty of shitas that we don't paskin like, but it's all there to help us find the truth, and it helps us remember how we got to the point. It helps us show the process of how we got to the halachic conclusion, which is all very important. When it comes to a machlokas l'shem shemayim, you hear out both sides. Beis Hillel and Shammai were both listening to each other. And in fact, the Gemara tells us in Yevamos that they got along great. Their children married each other, and it was a wonderful relationship between Hillel and Shammai. Okay, there are a few Gemaras that seem to have some interesting stories, maybe implying something else. Okay, whatever it is. But the other shita exists, the other idea exists when you are talking to someone, when you have a machlokas l'shem shemayim. But when it's a machlokas shalom l'shem shemayim, there's no other side. It's I'm right, and that's the bottom line, and there's nothing else to say. So that's idea number two. Idea number two is to take that step back. Take those 3 steps back and make sure you can hear the other side. And it might be painful sometimes, but that is the only way that you will be able to have any progress, because distance is dangerous. Idea number three. You have to stay calm and don't lose control. You know, when we lose control, even if it's for 1 second, we do things that we regret. We do things that we wish we would not have done. And it's something which is very difficult to do. Especially think about driving a car, right? If someone's driving a car and you space out or you look away for 1 second, that could be it, right? Obviously, we hope and we pray. Sometimes people do space out and whatever it is, it doesn't cost them. But all it takes is that 1 second. All it takes is that 1 second, and when you lose control for that 1 second, it's something which is very bad. And this is something which is not always so easy to do, to stay in control at all times, no matter what's going on around us. We know the mob mentality. It's very tough. Just look what's been going on in the world. It's very difficult to stay level-headed and even keeled when all of this is going on around us. The Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that one of the heroes of the entire Korach versus Moshe and Aaron story is the wife of Own Ben Peles. If you look at the beginning of the parsha, it says Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kas ben Levi v'dasan v'aviram b'nei Eliav v'own ben Peles b'nei Ruvain. So you have Korach and his Ada, you have Dasan v'aviram, and you have Own Ben Peles b'nei Ruvain. And Rashi already tells us, what did Ruvain have to do with this? Because Eilu Rasha Eilu Shcheino, they were next to Shevet Levi, and they got sucked into this machlokes, and Own Ben Peles was one of the main frontline fighters fighting for Team Korach against Team Moshe and Aaron. But then, later on in the Pesukim, when we talk about who was killed, that it was Korach and his Ada, and everyone was killed and destroyed, Own Ben Peles is left out of that. Dasan and Aviram were destroyed, but Own Ben Peles is left out of that. So what happens? So the Gemara in Sanhedrin fills in the story and tells us that his wife got involved. And his wife said, listen, Own, listen, it doesn't make any sense. You're being ridiculous. Why are you being ridiculous? Because, think about it. Let's just try to understand for 1 second. Let's say you do win this machlokas. Let's say Korach and his Ada come out on top. Guess what? They are all from Shevet Levi. They are all maybe in line to actually take over for Moshe and Aaron. They could potentially be people who end up getting something out of this whole machlokas. But guess who has nothing to gain at all? You. You are from Shevet Reuven. Even if you win, you still do not win. You gain nothing out of this. So why go against Moshe Rabbeinu when you have nothing to gain on the other end? Just stay out of it. And the Gemara goes on and tells us that Owen was pretty convinced, but then he still, you know, was feeling the itch to go back out to war, to go fight. It's fun. How could I stay away? And she stayed outside and told everyone that he was sleeping and eventually made him avoid that whole gathering and saved his life. And the Gemara says from there that what we learned from this whole exchange between Owen ben Peles and his wife is that Chachmas Nashim Bansa Besa, that the wisdom of women build the houses. The women just have a better sight as to what's going on. They're more wise, they understand what's happening, and they're able to, kind of guide you in the right direction. So Reb Chaim Shmulevitz asks a very interesting question. If you want to praise the women for something based on this story, would Chachma really be the number one thing? It's a genius move that Owen ben Peles' wife did. What was her argument? Her argument was, hey, Mr. Owen, you're not going to gain anything from this. And also, it doesn't seem like such a good idea to go against the guy who you just saw split the sea, bring all of these makos, give us the Torah. It doesn't seem like such a good idea to go ahead and do that. So maybe she was a tough, you know, she wouldn't let him go out. Maybe she was, I don't know, whatever other words you want to use, but brilliant? I don't know, I wouldn't think of the word brilliant for that. It seems like a pretty obvious idea. Don't go with the bad guys, stick with Moshe and Aaron. Look where they've gotten us until now. Especially when you have nothing to gain. Doesn't make any sense. So what's this chachma? What are we trying to say? So Reb Chaim Shmulevitz explains beautifully, and he says, and no, you have to understand, this was a mob mentality. It was, everyone was just going crazy. Everyone was going nuts. To be able to remain level-headed during a mob mentality is something which is valuable, something which takes a tremendous amount of chachma, something which takes a tremendous amount of insight. It's very difficult to do. It's a very hard thing when everyone is doing something and everyone is yelling something and everyone is going in one direction. To be able to not join, to be able to just stay calm in that type of situation, that requires a tremendous amount of chachma, and that's something which is not easy to do. We, as Jews, we've spoken about in the past, we have this ability to go against the grain. This is why v'yidgu larov bekerav ha'aretz, when Yaakov Avinu gives a bracha to Yosef and his children, he says, v'yidgu larov, you guys should be like fish, not just because some explain that fish, even though they're in the water, they always want more water, ein mayim ela Torah, even though we have some Torah, we want more, but many explain that it's more than that. That fish, this is what we said with the inverted nunin, right? That fish represent this idea of being able to swim upstream. They're the only thing in the water that don't necessarily follow the current. They don't necessarily follow the stream. They're able to go against the current. They're able to go against what's popular sometimes. They're able to go against the grain and do what they need to do to make sure they stay strong. So to remain calm and to not let ourselves lose control is something which is so key. Just look at, for example, the Igaris HaRamban. You look at the Igaris HaRamban and the letter that he left for his son. You just look. Anger is something which causes most of the negative things in the world. Anger and arrogance. The Rambam also tells us that all of the Midos were supposed to have the Shvil Hazav, but when it comes to anger, when it comes to arrogance, we need to make sure to keep that away. It's something which is so important to keep in mind. That's idea number three, to make sure that we stay calm and don't lose it even for 1 second, because that 1 second can cost us a machlokas for years and years to come. Idea number four. We get into machlokas and sometimes it's very petty and sometimes it's more important. Sometimes there are more fundamental things. Money is something. It makes sense. You know, it's a thing, unfortunately. People fight over it. It happens. Yes, it's true. But sometimes these battles that we have are ideological. You know, some discussion opens up at the table. You have some distant cousins who are more to the left or more to the right, and you get into this whole discussion, and it becomes a more hashkafic discussion, and then it becomes dangerous. It becomes dangerous because each one is trying to convince the other one that my way is right, and you guys are being crazy or whatever it is, and that's what it needs to be. And these ideological battles are sometimes where it can get very ugly. Rav Yisrael Salanter, and maybe a bit of a facetious comment, but maybe Chad, he has a very interesting take on our Mishnah. Remember our Mishnah again, that there are two types of machlokas, l'shem shemayim and shalom l'shem shemayim. Either you could be like Korach, which was not L'Shem Shemaim, or you could be like Hillel Shammai, which was L'Shem Shemaim. And if it's L'Shem Shemaim, it's Sofa L'Hiskayim. And if it's Shelo L'Shem Shemaim, it's not Sofa L'Hiskayim. So what does this mean? Again, the simple explanation, or there are a lot of simple explanations, I guess, is what does it mean that a machlokas that is for the right purpose will last, will be Hiskayim? So some explain that it means that both parties are going to be remembered, like Hillel and Shammai. The Gemara writes down both of their opinions because both opinions made sense. We just happened to paskin like one. Others explain what this means, Sofa L'Hiskayim, is that the other Shita won't die. When it came to Korach versus Moshe, so Korach and all his followers died because it was Ina Sofa L'Hiskayim. It also means maybe this whole dispute, this whole discussion is not going to be remembered. The whole topic's not going to be remembered. A lot of discussion and a lot of different pshatim as to what it means, Sofa L'Hiskayim versus Ina Sofa L'Hiskayim. Rav Yisrael Salanter says a very interesting pshat, kind of flipping what we would have thought from the regular pshat. And he explains, when you have a machlokas that's L'Shem Shemayim, we said it's Sofa L'Hiskayim. So when you have a machlokas that's L'Shem Shemayim, when someone thinks that they're being a vigilante, they're trying to stand up for God's honor, then it's Sofa L'Hiskayim. That type of machlokas is just going to keep going. So we flip Sofa L'Hiskayim from being a positive thing to being a negative thing. The negative thing, it's just going to keep going because, okay, fine, if it was just about that I don't like your shirt and you don't like my shirt, okay, fine, I can get over myself, but for God's honor, you're going to live in this way and I'm just going to let that happen while God's watching? What are you, crazy? That type of machlokas is Sofa L'Hiskayim because that type of fight never ends. Once you get God involved in your fight, forget about it. Then it's become too personal, and then there's no way it's ever going to end. You know, Rav Ruderman has a Rebbe in Ner Yisrael. He says there are two psukim in Koheles. One says, Al Tir Shaharbe, don't be too big of a rush. And then it says, Al Tiyut Tzadik Harbe, don't be too big of a tzadik. Which one is it? Should you not be too big of a tzaddik, too big of a rasha? Which one's worse, asks Rav Ruderman. And he explained, it might be worse to be too big of a tzaddik. What does that mean? Because people who think that they're fighting for the sake of heaven and only doing things for the sake of heaven, they're never going to do any sort of tshuva because they don't think they're doing anything wrong. At least the other person, eventually, hopefully, they'll come around, they'll daven, and we'll daven for them, they'll do tshuva, whatever it is. But the person who thinks he's doing everything perfectly well, who thinks he's always right, that person's never going to do tshuva in any capacity. It's interesting. It's important to have hashkafic discussions when you think it might actually lead to something positive or when you think that it won't lead to something negative. But once that becomes involved, when it becomes that type of situation, then it does become something which is negative. And it's destroyed a lot of relationships, a lot of families, for no reason really, especially when neither side is going to budge. Now, obviously, if you think you could be Mikari of someone or you think you can maybe give someone some inspiration, that's certainly worthwhile. You have to know. You have to know yourself. You have to know who you're talking to. You have to know your situation. But it's a very important thing to think about all of the time. One second. Now, idea number five. Number five, the idea is that sometimes people get into machloksim that have nothing to do with them. You know, your friend is telling you about something that happened at their school or their shul, and all of a sudden you have a vendetta out for that shul and that school, and you get involved in that machlokas. And not only is that not our fight, but it's not even there. It's their fight and 0% our fight. But we feel, you know, this is what's happening in the shul. This is what's happening on the block. I got to get involved. I got to take a side. I got to get into this action because machlokes is fun. You know, the Chiddushi Arim points out that if you look in Korach v'chada, so it doesn't mention their name. It just says that it was Korach and his followers. That's all it says. But then it mentions Dasan v'Aviram. And Dasan v'Aviram are singled out in a very intense way in this parsha. And they're known as the bad guys. Now, they are pretty bad. If you just look what they're saying to Moshe and the disrespect they show to Moshe and Aaron, it's really terrible. They're doing awful things. So, but still, why specifically are they being shouted out so much? Why are they being called out so much? So Chiddushi Arim explains that, as we started with, Oyla Rasha, Oyla Shleino, the only reason they were even roped into this machlokas, they're not even from Shevet Levi. They're from Shevet Reuven, who was just nearby. They happened to be nearby. But this was not their fight to fight at all. They had no say in this matter. Like, oh, Ben Peles, they had nothing to do with this. Yet they felt the need to get involved. They felt the need to fight this fight that had nothing to do with them. They just wanted to stir the pot. They just wanted the excitement of getting into a machlokas. And for that, they're going to get the extra curse. They're going to get called out and degraded in the Torah because people who are searching out a fight, especially when it has nothing to do with them, come on. It's better. We have enough fights within our own relationships, within our own selves. But it's important to make sure that we're sticking to our own fights, even when there do need to be fights. So just to review what we did, we know that this week is one of the parshios which teaches us about machlokas and the way to properly fight and the way to fair fight. And we know that peace is so important, and shalom is what we strive for. V'yaseim lecha shalom. We end off the Berachas Kohanim, the ultimate bracha, trying to vouch for peace, because that's really what it's all about. But unfortunately, we live in a world where it's very toxic and it's very difficult, and either I'm right or you are evil. And those are really the two options, and it's very difficult. And we spoke about how this is not even the ideal. Ideally, we shouldn't have any machlokas. Moshe and Aaron walked away. That would be the ideal, but we know that that's something very tough. But maybe a few ideas which can help us understanding that lo yiyeh kekorach v'chad aso, there never will be another fight like that. There's never a situation ever again that someone is 100% right and 100% wrong. Even if it's 90-10, 99-1, there's some sort of something from the other side that we're able to hear, we're able to understand. We know how tempting this idea is to win. The Chafetz Chaim already wrote about it in his Shmiras HaLashon, and to win is what we always need to do. He spoke about this almond tree, the almonds having this two elements to it, two ways to go about a machlokas. Either that it's so sweet at first, but then it gets bitter because no one wants to stay in machlokas, or it's bitter at first, it's tough to be mevater, it's tough to give in and to apologize, but it feels so good afterwards because that's what we're supposed to do. And we spoke about five potential ideas in terms of making sure that machlokas and disagreement can stay civil. Number one, making sure that it doesn't become personal, seeing how we view the person outside. Maybe our view is being jaded because some other interaction we've had with someone else. To be aware of these things. Number two is to hear the other person out. We take three steps back before Osa Shalom Bim Romav to make sure that we can see the whole picture. Hiding behind a computer, hiding behind text messages, so easy. And it's something which creates such nastiness and so much difficulty in all that we do. Idea number three was to make sure that we stay in control no matter what's happening around us. Own Ben Pelas's wife, the chachma of a woman, to be able to maintain the calm during the mob mentality. Idea number four is to kind of be careful when it comes to ideological battles. This idea of Rav Yisrael Salanter, that machlokas l'shem shemayim, once God gets involved, sofa l'iskayim, it's going to go on forever. And then finally, just keep your own fights. You don't need to get involved in everyone else's fights. It's something which is very difficult to do. But Amir Tzashem, we should take these ideas, these messages, and only continue to work together and work towards keeping the peace in every type of situation. Everyone should have a wonderful, wonderful night.